Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650 here. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance on a Canucks game day. We are live from the Kintec studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at dunbarlumber.com. We're about 2.5 hours away here. Oh, no, 3.5 hours, excuse me. 3.5 hours away from puck drop between the Canucks and the Lightning in Tampa Bay. And joining us now to chat a little bit about the Tampa Bay Lightning, he covers the team for LightningInsider.com. He is Eric Erlandson. Eric, thank you very much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm good. And don't worry about if you don't know the time, because I have no idea what day it is today.
Fair enough. It's Tuesday. I can confirm it is Tuesday. Yeah, we had a long weekend up here for Canadian Thanksgiving, so we're all just trying to get back into it as well. But it's Tuesday. It's 4 o'clock Pacific, 7 o'clock Eastern start time. I think we can all hopefully get it locked down from now. So the Lightning, I mean, we've played just the one game. It was a win, though. I mean, what coming into this season, what were your kind of big picture questions about how Tampa Bay would look, how their season is going to go here?
Well, there's certainly a lot more questions this year than maybe we've had in the past few. Obviously, the personnel. I mean, you look at the team that won the Cup in 21 and even went to the finals in 22, and you see all the turnover in such a short period of time. Obviously, no Steven Stamkos here anymore. Mikhail Sergachev traded. You know, so how is a Jake Guentzel going to fit in? Is he going to be a fit with Nikita Kucherov and Braden Point on that top line? If he is, it's probably one of the top lines in the league. Can the power play? Can they connect even without Steven Stamkos, one of the best power play scorers in the history of the league, no longer there? Can they get depth scoring? What's the defense going to look like? Is Andrei Vasilevskiy going to be completely healthy after having the back surgery last year in training camp? So those are some of the big questions that we still don't know if they're going to be answered. It was such a weird training camp, right? They had to deal with two hurricanes that, you know, affected our area here, and you know, they lost a preseason game. They had to have another one postponed. They evacuated to Raleigh last week before the hurricane came here. So it's been a very weird training camp for this team. So just the one game, we don't have a lot of answers on those questions yet.
With the departure of Steven Stamkos, I think what I'm most curious to watch tonight, especially because I didn't get a chance to watch the Kucherov show, their first game of the season, with a sort of full level of attention, Eric, is what's the power play look like? Who's taking the Stamkos shot? How are they functioning? How much has it changed? You know, one of the staple looks in the NHL of the last decade.
It's going to be something that evolves. You know, during training camp, I don't know how many different looks we saw them work on. You know, whether it was Brandon Hagel at that left circle, whether it was Cam Atkinson, who's a right-handed shot at that circle. Darren Radish has been the guy of late that's been occupying that circle, that, you know, that right-handed shot. If you're going to keep the same setup and utilize Nikita Kucherov on the half wall there over on the right side, you got to have a right-handed shot over there. So I think that they've kind of settled on. So it has been Radish. Very interesting in game number one, where their first power play opportunity, they lost the faceoff and could never get back in the zone. So their next power player that came around, they swapped out Jake Guentzel and put in Nick Paul to take the faceoff. Paul wins the faceoff, and bang, 10 seconds later, it's in the back of the net. So it'll be interesting to see how they look at it tonight if Paul stays out there for the faceoffs, or, you know, whatever they try to do. But I think the setup is probably going to look pretty similar. I mean, Braden Point scored that power play goal from his familiar spot right there in the bumper. They've had Guentzel down low, but with Paul, Paul's been in that down low spot. So, yes, you're missing that main weapon over there on the left side. But I think the overall look and setup is probably going to look similar until they get the personnel squared away.
Jake Guentzel, really the big headline acquisition, although there's a couple of interesting acquisitions for the Lightning, obviously with McDonough returning as well. But in terms of Jake Guentzel, you know, he's starting the season skating with Braden Point and Nikita Kucherov. And just on paper, look, that looks like it could be one of, if not the best lines in the league. And I think just in particular with Guentzel's history of playing with Crosby, you know, he knows how to read off elite players like Nikita Kucherov. What's your early sense of the fit with that trio and Jake Guentzel kind of sliding into the lineup?
Well, we only got two looks at it in the preseason, and they spent a lot of time in the offensive zone. Didn't result in much offense being scored, but lots of chances were created. And again, that's preseason. You know, you're not necessarily facing NHL lineups when you're doing that. You know, they're elite players, all three of those guys. So based on that look, yeah, it looks like it's going to work and it can work. And Gensel's got such a smart hockey IQ, and he has that ability to find soft spots, right, like right around the net and be in position. And, you know, if you're in position and your stick is on the ice, Nikita Kucherov is going to find you. So a lot of that stuff feels like it's going to work. Didn't see a lot of that in the game against Carolina to open the season on Friday. Gensel did miss a couple of days of practice, though, so I don't know if he's dealing with something or anything like that, if that affected anything. But they need that to work, right? They need that to be a dominant line and hope that they get, you know, another 20-plus goal season out of Anthony Cirelli, another 20-plus goal season out of Nick Paul, and hope that Cam Atkinson can get back to his 20-goal season. But you got to have that top line clicking.
Eric, a lot of teams, we've seen it over the years, sort of like managing decline, right?
Yeah.
Are the Lightning there yet, or does the Gensel signing give them a shot, even in a loaded sort of division picture out east?
Yeah, I think it gives them a shot. And if you look at, you know, obviously the departure of Stamkos and the addition of Gensel grabs the headlines here, right? That's the big change. The Mikhail Sergachev trade. I mean, to bring in a defenseman like J.J. Moser, and he's been, you know, they're trying him on the right side with Victor Hedman. You know, he's an NHL defenseman, and he can play 20 minutes a night. He's a different type of player than Mikhail Sergachev, but he's a top four defenseman in this league. And then you get Connor Geeky, right?
Yeah,
overall
monster.
A couple of years ago, that was a huge pickup. We didn't think that he would start here. We thought that he would go down to Syracuse and get some time in the AHL to kind of work on his game, but he earned his way onto this roster to start the season. So he's going to get that opportunity. So you just look at those changes and you get a little bit younger, you know, bringing in a Connor Geeky. You've got Kucherov, who's 30 years old, and Braden Point is 28 years old, and, you know, Brandon Hagel is 24, and Cirelli is 26. Like, you still have, you know, Victor Hedman obviously is, you know, on the other side of his career, even though he's still elite. Ryan McDonagh is 36, 35, 36. So you've got a couple of guys on that end. But I think with some of the departures over the last couple of years, that they're keeping themselves in contention. And then everything of this team's success is going to hinge on Andrei Vasilevsky. He wasn't himself last year coming off the back surgery. He had flashes of it, had flashes where he, you know, was just kind of an average goalie, and they can't afford to have him be an average goaltender. So he's a year removed now from that back surgery. So we'll see what kind of shape he's been in. He was really good against Carolina the other night. So everything they do, they have the elite talent. They have some pretty decent role players. They just need maybe a little more production offensively from those guys. But it all starts and ends with how Andrei Vasilevsky is going to play.
So let's get a little bit more into Geeky. I know some Western scouts that believe he's a potential monster in real short order, like to the point where people were wondering if Utah maybe jumped the gun dealing him for Sergachev. What have you noticed through training camp and in his first NHL game? What should Canucks fans be on the lookout for aside from, you know, a young 6'4" third line center tonight?
He's got some moxie to his game. That's kind of the first thing that kind of jumps out to you. That's not the Roxy, that's moxie. we saw that in training camp. And he came here to win a job, and he did everything. I think we saw just about everything in his toolbox at the age of 20 to earn this spot on his team. You know, they had a game in Orlando, a preseason game against the Panthers. Again, it wasn't full NHL rosters for either team. But at the end of the game, he messed up a drop pass on a power play with about a minute to go, right? And you could see, okay, that's the inexperience. Well, guess what? They regrouped. He took the puck, and he just went down ice, and he went down and he scored the game-winning goal with about 2 seconds left on the clock. You know, it's just that kind of it factor in certain players. So he has that. He's got the size. You know, he got himself in a little bit of trouble in terms of being suspended for a preseason game because he came off the bench to start a fight, a legal line change to come off. But that's part of his game as well, too, right? So he is the full package in a lot of things. Still has a lot to learn. He's got to get a lot better in the faceoff circle. But the first thing that you can tell, this guy is going to be an NHL player, and once he starts to put everything in his toolbox together, he's going to be a top six forward for sure.
You mentioned, obviously, the trade that sent Sergachev to Utah and Moser and Geeky coming back, and then separately, right, Ryan McDonough coming back to the Tampa Bay Lightning. So, you know, in essence, they kind of switch out Sergachev's minutes for McDonough's minutes on the blue line. How much is that going to change just the complexion of the defense corps, how they play, and how kind of John Cooper uses and divides up the roles and the minutes for his blue line?
Well, McDonough slots right back in with Eric Chernak, and they were a terrific pairing for three seasons, those three straight years they went to a Stanley Cup final. Very steady presence. And you can see Chernak was not the same type of player without McDonough by his side, and that's a testament to how good of a player Ryan McDonough is. Well, with those two back now, it kind of solidifies everything, and those pairing on the ice, especially in shutdown moments, they're so calming. There's such a calming presence out there. When there's a lot of chaos that can take place on the ice, they keep the game very calm, and McDonough's one of the best in the business at doing that in those situations. So that's a set pairing for sure right there. Chernak played, I don't know, with how many different guys last year and really last 2 years to try and figure out a way to get him to be back to that top four kind of guy. So with McDonough back, it does that. Hedman's minutes are always going to be Hedman's minutes. They need Emil Liljeberg, who came on last year, to kind of grow in his game. Big 6'4" defenseman, made some presence when he had a couple of really big hits that he delivered that kind of caught everybody's attention when he got here. You know, they need him to be better to solidify that number three spot on the left-hand side, and then they can shake down the right, because if Moser's going to play right, you've got Chernak, and then you dish it between Darren Radish and Nick Perbix, who's going to play on that right side on a third pairing. So, but McDonough's presence back changes everything they want to do, everything they hope that they can do to get back to being a better 5-on-5 team, because they were number one on power play. I think they were number five in penalty kill last year. That usually means that you're going to be an elite team, but they were like 23rd in five on five, you know, goals against. So they have to be much better in that area, and McDonough is a big part of that.
Eric, we really appreciate you taking some time to chat with us today. Enjoy the game in a few hours here.
Okay, be well, boys.
That is Eric Erlandson covering the Tampa Bay Lightning for LightningInsider.com, getting a set for the Canucks opponent tonight down in Tampa. And that discussion on Connor Geeky, I think a good shout, probably not a name that was super on people's radars here in Vancouver going into this matchup. But as Eric said, earned that third line center spot. And it's just, it must feel like a unicorn for the Tampa Bay Lightning, right? To have a guy who, as he said, was drafted 11th overall just a couple of years ago. We're so used to this being such a veteran laden team. And it still is in a lot of ways, obviously. I mean, they went and got Ryan McDonough, but just to have that little bit of high end young talent coming into the lineup is a dynamic we have not really seen in recent years with the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Yeah, look, you know what? In some ways, it's like they tried to win the Sergachev trade coming and going, mm-hmm. right? And they basically tried to do it the same way, right? You trade the more established guy who's not surplus to requirements, but who you can live without, right? For the young guy that hasn't quite hit but is tracking exceptionally well. You know, that's how they landed Sergachev for Drouin. They've tried to do it again, right? A little slight downgrade on defense, but they get younger with J.J. Moser, and then potentially a massive upgrade up front by bringing in Geeky. Geeky is awesome, man. Like, Geeky is a really interesting player, a real, like, physical, assertive, gives them a shot at having their Wyatt Johnston, or a shot at their Stankoven, or a shot at their Anton Lundell, right? And look, that's vital, right? The Canucks, by the way, need that themselves. I think it's one of the reasons why they've worked so hard to give Atu Ratu and Arshdeep Bains and company these sorts of looks, because if you can get a contributor, you know, like we've seen with Nils Höglander, like a real meaningful contributor at $1.5 million, or in Ratu's case, another year on his ELC beyond this one, right? He might be expiring. I can't remember. Anyway, he's expiring after this year, but nonetheless, it's a huge difference maker for a team, especially a team that, you know, when we think about what this offseason looks like, when we think about the looming OEL buyout expansion, right? When we think about some of the other considerations that this team's going to have to navigate. For example, the OEL buyout, you know, inflates for like three seasons after this year, but especially for the next two seasons. And they'll still have some Mikheyev on the books and other dead money. So, you know, finding those affordable contributors helps you patch over like sins of the past in addition to sins of the now, which teams inevitably bump into, especially when they're, you know, charging headlong into a contention window, which the Lightning are still doing, kind of raging against the dying of the light here.
I wanted to chat a little bit about, we got Yannick Hansen coming up at one, but we talked in the whiteboard about the Canucks lineup changes, and especially in the top six. And we focused on Arshdeep Baines getting the chance to play with JT Miller and Brock Besser. As part of that, Dan Heinen goes down to play with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusque, and Daniel Sprong looks set to come out of the lineup after a couple of high-profile defensive miscues in the first couple of games for Daniel Sprong. And I do think it's interesting that, okay, we're a couple games into the season here, and obviously Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff still trying to find that mix in the top six. Basically, what we're talking about at this point again is a couple of winger spots open in the top six, probably one on the left side with JT Miller and Brock Besser, and one on the right side with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusque. And for my money, the two best wingers the Canucks have had through games one and two, and again, very, very small sample, I understand that, it's Nils Höglander and Connor Garland. So I think we're in this kind of fascinating position where the coaching staff is tinkering and trying to find out, okay, who's going to have chemistry, who are the guys we can rely on in the top six. And you've got these options in Höglander and Garland, which seem almost tailor-made to move up into the top six at a certain point with the way that they're playing. Now, I will also say I really like the look of them together. I think they've looked really effective together. They've shown some chemistry. It just looks like exhausting to play against if you're the other team to have those two guys on the same line. So maybe you don't want to split them up. But even then, I mean, how many times have we fielded the question from the inbox when Dakota Joshua is healthy? Is it time to put Elias Pettersson between Dakota Joshua and Connor Garland? I think you could easily ask, do we want to see Elias Pettersson between Nils Höglander and Connor Garland at this point, right? Do we want to see Jake DeBrusque then move up with JT Miller and Brock Besser? Like, for me, those are probably your six best forwards in the lineup right now, all playing together in the top six. And again, it's not about, oh, that you have to do it because you need to start turning these results around. But if you're looking to find chemistry, if you're trying to find answers in your top six, at a certain point, you kind of have to look at Nils Höglander and Connor Garland in some configuration.
Philosophically, right, this is shared between Rutherford and Tocchet. And I'd imagine Patrick Helvin, given how closely the three work together. Balance is as not just like a means to an end, but an end in and of itself, something mm-hmm. that matters, something that creates the team dynamic you require, right? Remember that a lot of what the Canucks are trying to do is built on this philosophy that if everyone sublimates their own individual goals and offense and no one cheats at any point and on, if you play the quote unquote the right way within a structure and you all buy in with discipline to that, everyone gets fed. Right? Like, it's actually better for you counterintuitively. You just have to do it. And I think there's an idea that, like, depth, having balance, having different guys going off each night matters toward that end goal. And so Rick Tocchet talks about third lines being, you know, the guys that win games. Now, where I think this gets interesting for me, Jamie, is when we think of it from an evolutionary perspective. And this goes back to something I've talked about a lot, where as save percentage decreases, right?
Yep.
As the value of every shot increases, and as it becomes somewhat easier for the most skilled finishers in the game, the most skilled chance generators in the game to sustain elevated shooting percentages, and not easier, but more common, right? The best players in hockey tend to have a greater sway on sort of being the decisive piece in any given game. And so that's why I think when you go through the Stanley Cup playoffs last year, you see Connor McDavid sort of picking his teeth with people almost as if he were an NBA superstar. The Barkov-Forsling axis just completely taking over series at the top of the lineup. And you saw a lot less of those, like, and in the key moment of the season, Ruslan Fedotenko made the difference. Like, you see less of that, right? Like, across the board, it's a star league right now.
Mm-hmm.
Now, maybe that's a one-year blip, right? Hockey generally has had a lot more one-year blips where, you know, it looks like the offensive players are taking over. Generally speaking, defense and goaltenders have had an edge and pressed that advantage for most of the last 30 years. So I guess I sort of look at it though and wonder.
It's not just a 1 year thing though; it's a trend in that direction, right? Like the one that we just keep seeing new milestones set in that trend. And last year was an example. Now the trend might plateau at a certain point,
totally,
but it's not a completely out of nowhere blip from last year, right? It's part of an ongoing trend.
And so this is where I'm sort of curious. Like 10 years ago, prioritizing having that elite third line, the third line that wins you games, made a lot of sense with how the league was played, with how infrequent goals were, with the priority that teams necessarily had to place within an environment like that on controlling play, as opposed to, you know, generating better scoring chances, frankly. And now it's kind of flipped. And I sort of wonder, given where the game is tracking, does it not make sense to try and win games at the top of the lineup? And sort of this is sort of the tension that Tocchet and the Canucks are going to have to work through, because it's pretty clear that they're willing to play, you know, their, let's say, third, fourth, and fifth best wingers, two of them on the third line to bolster, you know, their depth and
the balance.
And all of those sort of philosophical precepts that this organization believes in and which this team is built to enhance while trying to cobble together enough at the top end of the lineup, and with the idea that, you know, JT Miller and Elias Pettersson should be skilled enough playmakers to help, you know, a Danton Heinen fit in, or a Daniel Sprong fit in, or a Kiefer Sherwood fit in, whatever. So, you know, this is sort of an intention element that I think we'll probably watch the club work through, perhaps fitfully, perhaps not. Like, either one of these Flyers that the club has brought in, not like ex-Flyers, Philadelphia Flyers, like F-L-I-E-R-S, yes, one of these guys that the club has taken a flyer on is auditioning. Whether it's an internal guy like Baines, whether it's an external free agent like, you know, the many
Sprong
gentlemen I listed, either one or two of those guys work, right? Either one or two of those guys build the necessary chemistry with Pettersson or Miller that they make that a home Alex Burrows style, or it's not going to work, and the club's going to have to find answers, right? Yep. Like it's one of the two.
And
it's just too soon.
And again,
to sort of suggest.
I'm not saying like, oh, it has to. That experiment's over. You got to put them up now, right? Like that's not the case. But it's just something to note, and I think to keep in the back of our heads, like, okay, eventually you got to try that. Eventually, if the results don't come, right?
For sure.
If the process doesn't even start to come with those other guys, you got to break the glass and try that. I think it's an interesting contest. The lineup tonight, I mentioned, right, with Gensel, Point, and Kucherov all in the top line. It's like three best forwards. Just put them together. Put them together at the top line. Try to dominate in those minutes. Now, look, their second line is still, you know, Cirelli, Hagel, Paul. That's a really good second line, potentially. But I think it's a noticeable change in tactics, right?
The dog factor on that line
is outrageous.
Through the roof.
Yeah, Cirelli and Paul in particular. I like Hagel, too. But, like, whoo.
Why are you leaving Hagel out?
No, Hagel I view as more of an offensive guy.
But Hagel
Cirelli and Paul is just... Man, that's
Hagel,
tough.
Hagel is a puck battle hound. You
they're all good.
It.
I'm not trying to slander Brandon Hagel.
You're gonna see Brandon Hagel bark tonight, I promise you now. Especially now that you've jinxed him.
After I've slandered him. All right. Yannick Hansen joins us next here on Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. It's Jamie Dodd and Thomas Drance. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Roar is back at BC Place for the BC Lions 70th season. Get your tickets now at BC Lions.com. We are 3 hours away from puck drop here between the Canucks and the Tampa Bay Lightning. Producers Dom and Lena are grooving in the control room. Do we have Yannick on the line?
Yeah, he's ready.
All right. You're too busy dancing to let me know. I get it. It happens sometimes.
Which one of you is Crockett? Which one of you is Tug?
What? All right, enough of that. Now joining us, former Vancouver Canuck, a regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. It's Yannick Hansen. This insider is brought to you by the Magnuson Auto Group, Metro Ford, Port Coquitlam, and Magnuson Ford in Abbotsford on both sides of the Fraser to serve you. Yannick, thanks very much for doing this. How are you today?
Yeah, my pleasure. I'm good. How are you?
We're doing very well. So, you know, obviously a couple of overtime losses and or an overtime loss and a shootout for the Canucks to start the season. And based on how they practiced yesterday, Rick Tocchet and the coaching staff still tinkering, still trying to find some answers, especially in the top six. What have you noticed from the Canucks forward group and from the JT Miller and Elias Pettersson lines to start the season so far?
Well, obviously, JT stood out that he's kind of continued as he left off, where Petey is still sputtering a little bit, if you will. And everybody's kind of waiting to see if there's a solution, which kind of Petey we'll see. It would be nice to see him get back to where he was at the beginning of the season, middle of the season. So we don't have to worry about that it was just a short fluke and whatever it was that got to him, injuries or whatever the excuses was at the end of the year was what caused this. But as the longer this progresses where you're not finding the firepower clicking in the top six, the more questions will arise and the more pressure that will come on the coaching staff to get this solved and then eventually on the players, of course, as well.
Yannick, watching that Philadelphia game, there were so many instances where Pettersson's in shooting locations, but it's like there's an extra second, extra half second, just like he's sort of almost double clutching on his shots, just looks so much less decisive than what we've seen before. Did you notice something similar, and is that something that can happen when a player's maybe hasn't had like that positive reinforcement from getting results for a prolonged stretch of time?
Yeah, you'd think that a new season would bring a fresh start, if you will. Mm-hmm. But the first game, what stood out was he had it in the middle of the slot and he chose to pass it where you're kind of screaming at the TV, shoot the puck, shoot the puck. it's one of those where there's no question there is some doubt, something going on where he obviously wants to be producing. He wants to be the guy, if you will, and he's not. And that can lead to a lot of different things. For offensive players, it's looking for the perfect play. Let's see if we can set a teammate up here where he just got to get it into an empty net, and then we'll go from there. And it's tough to get out of that. We always used to say, well, just shoot as much as possible, get to the front of the net, hope that one bounces in off of you. A lot of times, you just need a little bit of a wind in your back, a goal, a helper, a nice play, and all of a sudden it's in the past. But obviously the longer it goes on, the more emphasis it will come on it and the more pressure and the more you're squeezing your stick. So you'd like to see him especially get out of this as quick as possible. New line mates as well, obviously the brush coming in. You'd like to see him start forming some chemistry. So you have that 1-2 points with JT and Brock and then Petey and DeBrusque in your top six. And like right now, you're looking for it.
Now, Yannick, we were debating this on the last segment, but obviously the Canucks have this third line with Garland and Hoglander, and through two games, it's been their best line, right? And we sort of know what Hoglander can do. We know what Garland is capable of, especially at 5-on-5. The Canucks, though, seem to be sort of auditioning. Like Baines looks like he's going to play top line tonight. Heinen started with the Miller line, looks like he'll be with the Pettersson line tonight. We've seen Daniel Sprong sort of get that opportunity and now projected at the moment to be a healthy scratch. At some point, does prioritizing having a strong third line almost get in the way of loading up and having as dynamic a top six as this team could possibly have? Like, is that intention for you, or do you think they're right to prioritize balance in this way?
I think neither Garland or Hoglander are top six wingers for the long haul. I don't feel like you're leaving anything out there. They're good in that spot because they play above their limit there, that they can tilt the ice. You throw those guys in the top six. We've seen it with Garland many times. And you just kind of disappears a little bit because you're different positions. Different guys want the puck. Garland drives a line. There's no question about that. His centers aren't puck hawks. And I'm not saying that in a bad sense, but if you're playing with Petey and JT, if Garland's out there, there's two guys I'd rather have the puck than him. And that's where some guys are just better suited for certain situations. Can they jump in there here and there? Yeah, for sure. And when somebody needs a boost or whatever, you switch these guys in. But again, it would be nice for them to get their duo set first, and they aren't set. Yeah, JT and Brock are set, And we saw last year and the year before how many different players they could cycle through there, and they were still producing. Once you have that set, it's a lot easier just to sprinkle in a Sprong, sprinkle in a Heinen, or whoever it is at that point, because they're running so hot. And if you get the same thing with Petey and the Brust, then you can do it there as well. The problem is when you haven't found that, now you're searching for treason that needs to work out, and instead of just one guy that has to come in and complement two other guys. And it's a lot easier when you have two that are going, they're playing the same way, the third guy just comes in and joins in. So if they can sort out, especially the PD and the Brusk, that'll make it a lot easier on everybody.
Yeah, and Arshdi Baines is the guy who looks like he's going to get a chance to be that third member next to JT Miller and Brock Besser. And, you know, interesting opportunity for Baines, right? Obviously went down to Abbotsford, didn't make the team coming out of preseason, then was recalled. And now for his first game of the season, he goes right to the top line with those two players. For a young player like that in Arshdi Baines, right, who doesn't have a ton of NHL games under his belt, was down in the AHL pretty recently, what's the challenge of not just getting into the lineup for the first time, but going right to playing with the, you know, with two of the team's best players on the top line?
Well, sometimes when you get called up and you fiddle into the bottom six, all you got to produce a little bit of energy, some good shifts, draw a penalty, create a scoring chances or two, and then that's considered a good game. When you jump into the top six, JT and Brock, you got to score. Not you personally, but the Lions got to score. The Lions got to produce. The Lions got to win their matchup. Got to preferably win a game. So there's a lot. It's a different kind of pressure when you go in there, because it's not enough to just play a good game now, to just be good by yourself. Now you need the fivesome or the threesome here to play well, to produce, because if they don't, chances of you winning the game is pretty slim. Don't win the game, you might not get another shot.
Yannick, I'm curious, because you had the career path where, you know, you came over, you debuted in the playoffs, as I recall, before you'd played an NHL regular season game early in your career, and sort of the next year end up back in the American League despite that, come up, play five games, and it was sort of that third professional season where you cemented yourself as an NHL player. And sort of my observation of Baines from what we saw last year was almost that he was like playing coach's pet hockey, right? Like the defensive energy was there, the stops and starts, but maybe he wasn't playing his game. Is that something that can happen as a pro player gets their feet wet at the NHL level?
Later you mentioned we're two different styles. I was told to play a different way if I wanted a career in the NHL, so I had to change. I wasn't going to be a top six scorer in the NHL. So they sat me down and said, hey, listen, if this is what you want, you can have a fine career in the American League in Europe, being a power play guy and these things. But if you want to play in the NHL, you're not going to take Hank's spot on the half wall. You're not going to take Danny's one-timer away. So it was one of those things where sometimes you have to adjust because you're just not good enough. And yeah, you're good enough in junior. You're good enough in the minors to play these roles. But in the NHL, there's only so many offensive spots available. I know the league has changed a little bit, and it is more four-line scoring and everybody producing and these things. But again, there's only so much to go around. So a lot of times, players do have to adjust a little bit and do different things if they want to stick around. There's, of course, a certain few that can come in and play the same way throughout their entire career life, if you will. But most of us will come in and we'll have to adjust a little bit, learn different things in order to stick around.
Yannick, one of the things that we've heard from head coach Rick Tocchet after the first couple of games is, hey, the team's generating a lot of offensive zone time. They've got the puck in the right end of the rink a lot, but they're having trouble converting that into shots, into scoring chances. Certainly, you know, I'm sure you were on teams that were in that position over the course of your career, right? Where, hey, we're close to the other team's goal, but we just can't seem to get those real grade A scoring chances. When you do find yourself in that position as the team, what are the kind of things you need to work on, the things you need to do to start converting that zone time into real scoring chances?
The easiest things is obviously pucks to the point and then get shots on net with traffic. It doesn't require anything special. A little bit of hard work on the boards and then fighting for positioning around the nets. Obviously, at that point, you're banking on a little bit of luck because now it's tipping or it's deflection screens for you to score. But a lot of times it's easier to get them that way instead of you tic-tac-toeing, setting up a one-timer on the back door in the middle of the slot, which teams obviously zone in on. They don't want to give that up either. A lot of times teams, they will shrink in their own end and they will give you the points because those are the least dangerous ones. So a good way to start is to spread out or make the zones a little bit bigger. By using your Ds, you're forcing the forwards, the defensive forwards, now to come out to them. It leaves a little bit of space in behind, and now you can get yourselves hopefully some pucks in that gap between the Ds and the forwards where you can actually have a legitimate chance of scoring some goals.
What have you thought just generally over these two games? I mean, does it matter? Like, we all know better, right? Like, it's just two games, whatever. If this happened midweek and the Canucks had dropped two games but got points in each, it would barely register as a talking point in this market. But when it comes at the start, Yannick, obviously the temptation is to sort of read more or place more weight on what we've seen so far. What have your just first impressions been, though, of this team?
Yeah, there's two tales to this. Obviously, it's not good enough. You've had leads against two, on paper, weaker teams, and then they found a way to come back and beat you, which shouldn't happen. But you look around the league, there's a lot of teams that are sputtering here at the start that people aren't anticipating having a rough goal. So it does happen. Does Vancouver necessarily have the leeway or the runway to allow themselves to do that? I don't believe so. That they need to be good throughout. We're not at the top of the totem pole, so to speak, right now. I think you're chasing a couple of teams, so any points you can scrape right now, it will be a benefit down the line. So again, they have had good stretches. We all saw the first 20, 25, 30 minutes of the Calgary game where they were very, very good. And then not so much at the end. And that's the problem is we've seen that story before. Obviously, last year was a little bit different. But year back, that was how they played. They were creating offense. They were scoring goals, but they couldn't hold on to a lead. So I think we're all still sitting with that is, Who are the real Canucks? Will they please stand up? Kind of thing. Where we were only one season removed of them proving us all wrong. Where a year ago we sat here and it's like, okay, they're a bubble team, and if they get close, it'll be a great. And all of a sudden, they were at the top of the standings and considered a legitimate threat. So we obviously love to see that continue, that trend and that belief. And these two games haven't really given us that. And I think that's why there's a little bit of talk on the lines, the radio shows, the TVs about what's going on. Are they fixing it and all these things? But like I said, it is premature because it is only two games. But we have seen a lot of this in the past, and it is still the same core. So you're wondering what's what.
What kind of reaction for the team in this situation, right? Where, look, okay, they haven't won yet, but it's only two games. They've picked up points in both of those games. And it seems to me that's probably, you want to strike a balance between having urgency, right? As you said, there's obviously things in their game that haven't been good enough that you want to tighten up. So you want to have that urgency to get better and go get those wins, but you don't want to overreact, right? You don't want to panic to just a couple of games to start the season. In your experience, what's the kind of best way for a team as a whole, for the leaders on a team to approach this situation, right? Slower out of the gates than you were hoping for.
Well, you're obviously preaching patience. It's two games, and like you said, we still got points, but we're also only like two games away from panic probably setting in. They lose tonight in Tampa. I'm not sure where they go after that, but
Florida. But no Tkachuk or Barkov.
Yeah, you can't lose there. You go down 0-2-2 to start the season. Now we're looking at Edmonton last year where, yeah, I know they went 0-8 or whatever it was at the beginning of the year there. But that's what you're starting to look at real fast. So yeah, everything is fine and dandy so far. We've gotten points. But you need results now. before this turns into a legitimate panic where you're like, okay, what is actually going on here? Is the goalie situation needs to get fixed here from other than what we have in-house? Do we need to rethink our top six, our D pairings and all these things? So we're fine, but you need a result now. And you need the leaders to step up and make sure that happens. And it's not easy flying to Florida and get these results. It's a long trip. Time change are kicking in. You've only had a day and a half there. And now you're playing on paper some potentially very good teams. So you need results now. Otherwise, that mood where you're preaching patience will change very swiftly.
With the early road trip here, Yannick, I mean, is there a benefit, especially when it hasn't maybe started the way the team had drawn it up on the whiteboard? Is there a benefit to getting out on the road this swiftly following a pair of, you know, disappointing results?
The problem with getting on the road is practice time kind of disappears. So if you have a new team and you set your lineup and all these things throughout camp, when you go on the road, you don't have chance to really practice together lines and all these things. You might have had a couple of sessions together. Maybe you played a game with your line mates that you're playing with now, but you haven't had any extended time. There will be a lot less noise now. You obviously have the reporters that follow the team, but it won't get thrown at you every single day when you turn on the TV, when you're done practice and this thing. So in that sense, it's easier, but lazy. The things that you could probably use some work on, probably won't get it here on the road. And then that's one of there are pros and cons with everything, but those are the two big ones where the noise will go away, but so will your practice time.
Last thing I wanted to ask you, Yannick, is we heard over the weekend Rick Tocchet, you know, speaking just about what they were doing at practice, talk about working on their line changes, right? And specifically, he thought some of them were sloppy in the first couple of games and trying to tighten those up. You know, and it's, I think sometimes for our listeners and for us in the media, it's like you kind of hear that and you think, oh, isn't that kind of a basic thing to be working on? But from your perspective, why is it that, you know, teams do need to go kind of reinforce those things, and why is it that line changes can end up getting sloppy even for veteran teams over the course of a season?
Line changes is something that can be very selfish or unselfish. You change at the right time or the wrong time. And changing at the right time means you're probably giving up an opportunity. You'd like to change when you have the puck going on the offense, but that also means you're taking a little bit less offense. A lot of times you see guys changing on the back check, which means now you've had your chance to score your goal, but now I'm actually tired and I want to get off. I don't want to play another 20, 30 seconds in my end. But if everybody does it right, nobody gets cheated. And that's where it gets sloppy, when some guys do it right and some guys do it wrong, because now you have guys always coming in trying to catch up, gotta chase in odd man rushes and these things. And it's one of those things where it's almost like a culture thing. It's like, don't screw me over, I won't screw over the next guy kind of thing. And if everybody does it, there's no problem because nobody gets cheated. But if one guy starts, okay, I'm going to take another 20 seconds, we might get a rush chance here, I might turn this into a 4-on-3, and then you go, but now you're burned out, so now you're not coming back defending. Instead, you're changing once this chance has happened. And now that guy coming out, he's like, oh, now I'm changing on the back check. And that's the sloppy part that kicks in real fast. So I say a culture above everything, and playing the right way means you're also changing the right way. And it's a lot of little things where you can clean up your game, and it will benefit you. But again, like I said, it means you're putting somebody else in front of you, because it means they're going to get this opportunity that you might have gotten instead.
Yannick, really appreciate the time. As always, thank you for doing this, and enjoy the game tonight.
Yeah, you too. Take care.
That is Yannick Hansen, former Vancouver Canuck, and of course, regular contributor here on Sportsnet 650. And we benefit. People show loss, our gain, because of the early start time. So Canuck Central coming up directly after us, which means we get to chat with Yannick Hansen for a change today. Always a pleasure to have Yannick Hansen on the show. And, you know, I thought it was an interesting answer, right? Because you can feel even Yannick is feeling a little bit of a sense of urgency for the Canucks, right? He's like, hey, there's some things that need to be better. There's some questions still maybe lingering from past seasons before last year about does this team have the mental toughness and all of that to get off to a good start, to get things back on the rails. But it's also two games and you can't panic. But I did think it was interesting that he said, you know, tonight is a big game, because if you lose tonight, then all of a sudden you're going to Florida and you're on the verge of not just a slow start, but a really, really poor start out of the gates.
Well, yeah. And this is a tough game. I mean,
it's a very tough game
coming back. You know, that community's been through a lot, mm-hmm. right? You know, there's going to be some extra energy in the building, some extra, you know, people being honored. They're always, you know, the Lightning do such a great job of this too, right? A really sharp community-minded organization. Like, don't be shocked if there's like a big donation and like you know, something surprising. Like, this is not a team that is going to, you know, miss a moment from like a cultural outreach perspective, and what that does to the environment of a building where you've got, you know, a community rallying, right, and on and on. There's a lot, even outside of the difficulty of navigating the Lightning from a hockey perspective, that the Canucks are going to be facing an uphill climb tonight, with or without Tyler Myers in the lineup, right? Mm-hmm. And with Artur Shelov's trying to break, sort of bounce back after what was a really tough outing. So, yeah, I mean, you're going to catch a break in South Florida with no Barkov and Tkachuk in the lineup, right? That's going to be a welcome sort of balm for the Canucks. But even like the Blackhawks at the end of this road trip have looked plucky. Right? The Flyers, we know, are a tough matchup for the Canucks. We've literally seen it every time they've played for 2.5 years now. So maybe longer, honestly. Maybe like 5 years. I feel like it's been a long time since the Canucks played well against the Philadelphia Flyers. So anyway, I think there's a lot at stake here in some ways. But it's like Yannick said, right? It's one of those things where there's a lot at stake and there isn't, right? It's not that there's a lot on the line tonight. It's that you don't want a loss tonight to snowball into more.
Yeah.
Right. And so, again, it matters, the micro matters, but it's still the big picture that we have to look at and be focused on. And I think that tension is an interesting one going into a key game in a difficult environment.
And there's always the caveat of, okay, if they lose tonight, but Elias Pettersson is incredible, is the best player on the ice, a lot of Canucks fans would take that. You know what I mean? It's like, okay, you lost. That's tough. But at least you're starting to see that process go in the right way, right? You're starting to see some of the things that you think are going to be durable and help this team win games down the line show up. I mean, I think that's always an important, like, it depends how they lose, if they lose, right?
Right.
When we start talking about, you know, what the panic meter could be tomorrow if this result doesn't go their way tonight. All right, we got one final segment here coming up next. As I mentioned, Canucks Central is coming on at 2, and they'll have the pregame coverage for you at 3 going into the 4 o'clock puck drop against the Lightning. We'll hear from Rick Tockett, and we'll dive into the inbox as well. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Send your thoughts in. Final segment of Canucks Talk is next here on Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drance here with you. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Let Kubota do your heavy lifting. Visit them online at dleamc.com. We are live from the Kintech Studio. 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber in Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome details at DunbarLumber.com. And you can get your questions, thoughts, comments into the Dunbar Lumber text line. We'll dive into them here momentarily. We are going to play comments from Rick Tocchet, pregame comments from Rick Tocchet here momentarily when as soon as we have those ready to go. But before we do that, again, 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. And as you might expect, Drancer, a lot of questions, comments, thoughts coming in about Elias Pettersson. And I think that's fair. I mean, as you were describing to Yannick Hansen, right, there's certainly a tentative feel to what Elias Pettersson is doing. It looks pretty similar to what we were seeing at the end of last year and through the playoffs. I don't think it's panic time just yet, but I also understand the concern when it just doesn't feel like much has changed, right? And, you know, as Yannick was saying, sometimes when you're struggling with confidence, maybe, you know, you need to get out of a rut. The best thing to do is just fire the puck at net, go to the net, go to the front of the net, right? Hope one bounces off of you. Just try to do anything you can to manufacture that little bit of luck to get you going again. I do think it's tricky with Elias Pettersson because so much of what has made him at his best a dominant player comes down to how he reads the game, how he processes the game, right? The ability to see unorthodox things on the ice, the ability to make those really advanced reads. And I can imagine if you're in his shoes, the thought of simplifying your game, it's like, well, hold on, but that's what makes me special, is that I'm able to play a very unsimple game. And when I watch the player right now, it just seems like he's kind of in his head a little bit, right? Like there's a struggle between, okay, I'm Elias Pettersson, I'm supposed to do these amazing things, but it's hard to do those when you're lacking confidence out there.
Yeah, and you know, I've said before, my vision or view of Pettersson has always been that he might be a bit of a precision instrument, right? Mm-hmm. That finding that B game, right? Finding a way to be effective even when you're not feeling 100%, when you're dealing with an injury, when your confidence isn't as high, when your line mates aren't finishing anything. You know, I do think that's sort of work in progress for him, right? Like, we know that he can be like a devastating super weapon when he's on, but there have now been multiple extended stretches in his career, and I'm talking like 40, like half season stretches, where it's mystifying, right? Like where the juice is just zapped from his game entirely. You know, in both cases, I think it was a complex set of issues, and it took a while to work through, and the first time around, he did work through it and then have a 100-point season the next year, right? So, you know, when I look at Pettersson, I look at 320 games as a top 10 centerman, a top 5 centerman, fringe top 5 centerman in the NHL, and I look at, you know, 80 games that have left me scratching my head. And you know, the fact that this season didn't cleanly demarcate like a new phase is, you know, I guess a little disappointing, but it's also a little early. Right?
Yes.
Because again, we're two shots that we're a half inch off from us talking entirely differently about this player and this team, frankly. So let's give it some time. But yeah, I thought watching that game, there were so many moments where he was just a little indecisive, where he just lacked juice. I don't know how else to say it. There wasn't the same level of juice that there usually is in his game. But I also think the top six in general hasn't been on their game, to be totally honest with you. Like, Miller had a great first period against Calgary, with the exception of the pass, I guess.
The Mantha pass
that got picked off. He had a huge moment at the end of that game, but 5-on-5 after the first period against Calgary, the Canucks didn't generate a shot on goal. Some of those like puck management issues that Miller has occasionally had have been present in that line's game. They haven't outscored their opponents 5-on-5. This isn't to be like, oh, well, I just, you know, there's this notion that I think, like, the top line's doing exactly what they were doing last season, and Pettersson's come in and struggled, and it's like, I think the entire top six has been a little bit off, has looked like they're still building rapport, been a bit of a juggle in terms of which line, sort of third member of the line has been there. I don't know that Pettersson and DeBrusk have had instantaneous chemistry. Miller and Besser have shown their usual chemistry, but it was all 5-on-4. Right. So like, I just think and then Quinn Hughes hasn't been getting shots through, right? Hasn't been his usual self, despite that incredible moment on the game tying goal against Calgary. Like, I don't think Quinn Hughes has taken over these games the way that we're used to Quinn Hughes taking over games. And by the way, that we know Quinn Hughes is going to take over 40 to 50 games this year individually. Like, we know that that's going to happen. So I'm not pointing to any of this stuff as real concerns. It's just descriptive. Like, for me, I think there's a focus on Pettersson because this stretch has been so odd, so different from everything that's come before it. I think it was contrasted in the playoffs with Miller's excellence.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if you're focusing solely on Pettersson for the first two games of the season, I think you're missing the wider picture here, which is just that to this point, Vancouver's best players haven't been the reason they win. To me, that goes beyond Pettersson. And yet they've still managed to pick up points, which when, you know, one of the things I'm most confident about you as a team hasn't come to bear yet, and you're still doing okay. That tends to be something that I look at optimistically, as opposed to, you know, with the big C sort of concern. Which Canucks am I concerned about? Like, I don't think any of Vancouver's best players have really been on yet, and I expect that they will be more nights than not going forward.
Yeah, it's the Pettersson one is so fascinating, right? Because I think, you know, I have been very confident about the player coming into this season based on his track record, you know, having the summer to reset and all of that. And I'm certainly not ready to punt on that take, right? We're two games into the season. I would still bet on him having a very, very good year. And I don't even have an answer to like the question I'm about to pose, but at a certain point, right, you have to revisit that take. And it's not two games. I don't know what the number is, though. You know what I mean? And it's, I mean, I guess we'll find out, or we might find out, but, you know, it does start to get increase in seriousness with every game, especially when you start to track it back to last season and through the playoffs, and all of a sudden you're not just talking about like a 6-week stretch, right? You're talking about a lot longer. Again, I'm not saying, and therefore it's time to panic. It's just, I'm more just kind of thinking out loud, like, when does it start to go from, okay, we can write that off because of his track record, to this is getting pretty serious here? I don't know the answer to that question.
I don't either. To be totally clear with you,
I don't think anyone does. Like, I don't, how either. Do you balance those things?
Well,
right?
We got a text in that's, Pettersson could finish the season with 40 points and Drantz would still say he's worth every penny. Come on, Thomas. Your defense of Pettersson is borderline pathetic now. Look, if you get 40 points out of an $11.6 million player, that's going to be a problem.
Yes.
But let's like, unequivocally, we're not close to that point yet, right? Like, even as poor as he's been across his last 40 games or whatever, like, I remember from sort of the All-Star break on, it was 24 points in 40-ish games, mm-hmm. if you included the playoffs. So that's still on pace for 50 points. Like, even the absolute nadir of this has not been at the level that this commenter is suggesting. I mean, if Pettersson has a 40-point season, let's revisit it. It's not going to happen. Like, that's not who this guy is, barring injury. So, yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, we've been through this before. It looked dark. You had, you know, people suggesting that he should be sent to the American League last time out. And my point was just that we've never seen a guy come into the league, have 200 games like this, and then not be good, right? Like, the worst that we've ever seen a player who did this at the start of their career, the worst we've ever seen them be over the balance of their career is, who was my guy? Paul Stastny, right?
Mm.
Paul Stastny was my, like, at the very least, this guy's going to be Paul Stastny. And the same basic rules of logic apply. You know, you come into the NHL, you have a 100-point season before the age of 25, right? You are 413 points in your first 409 games. You are a point per game plus centerman with excellent two-way value. And then people seriously think it's just gone? I mean, it's like, it's possible, but I really struggle to imagine that. I don't think we've ever seen it. Like, I'm just trying to think of an analogy for it. And maybe if you rag the puck, I'll do a little bit of research and find it. But, like, I strongly doubt that anyone's been a point per game player across their first 400 games and then not continued to be, like, at the very least, a top center in the NHL.
It would be a wild situation.
He'd have to be like Alexei Yashin or something. Like, come on, what are we talking about? We're talking about like a once in a generation event? Maybe, but I don't really find that likely.
Yeah, and it's the kind of thing where, because it is such a rare event, it needs to be, there needs to be more certainty, a lot more certainty that it's happening than we have right now, right? Like, the evidence has to be really, really overwhelming, at least for me, to get there. Anyways, we'll, I'm not going to rag the puck, but we'll let Rick Tocchet rag the puck here for a little bit. And lots of texts coming in, of course, so we can pick up some of those on the other side. But before we do that, here is... All right, never mind. We don't have Rick Tocchet ready just yet here. Anyways, we'll try to get that before the end of the show so we can hear from Rick Tocchet and what he had to say about Archdeep Baines coming into the lineup and some other things before the Canucks take on the Tampa Bay Lightning. Dave from Strathcona texts in, let's get real. Petey gets 2 points tonight, then all is forgiven, and this conversation is in the rear view window. I don't think that's entirely true.
No, I disagree with that.
I don't think that's true at all, especially it depends on how the points come, right? If he picks up two secondary assists on the power play, I don't think that's making even a blip in the conversation, right? It might push it off the front page or the lead of our show for tomorrow, but I don't think it's changing the conversation entirely. I think what people want to see, and it's very fair, like, I don't disagree with people wanting to see certain things from Elias Pettersson. I think where I disagree is just the confidence that we will see them. But what people want to see is dominance, because that's what we've seen from Elias Pettersson in the past. That's what they're paying him to do. Now, if he's dominant for a stretch of, you know, 5, 6, 7 games, then yeah, that I think changes the conversation considerably, obviously, around Elias Pettersson. But it's long enough now that the, oh, hey, you know, well, he didn't look great up there, but at least he got a couple points on the power play. Like, I don't think that's changing the conversation for people with Elias Pettersson. Okay, Rick Tocchet audio now ready. Here is the head coach of the Vancouver Canucks.
Rick, just heading into the first game on the road this season, how are you feeling? How's the group feeling?
Good. I think a lot of guys like going on the road, especially, you know, had a, you know, when you're at home with a camp and stuff. I think it's a good time for guys to bond. Plus, you know, we're a good road team last year. We have that identity, so it's good to come on the road, and you know, I want to see us play that identity. Shore up a few things. You know, obviously, we even the 3-on-3 overtime, I think we can be better at that, and then holding leads. So, yeah, early in the seasons, and we got stuff to work on, but the guys are pretty excited about this road trip.
Something you mentioned was just liking the starts in the first two games of the season. How do you make sure they come out with that first solid 20 minutes?
Yeah, no, our team, most nights start on time, so I really, really like that, the game plan and stuff like that. I think as the game goes on, I think that's when we got to make sure that we hold our identity. We did it, like I said, you use past experiences as examples, and you know, I told the players today, I mean, we're a really good team when we had the lead, so let's just make sure that we do the right things, right changes. I think sometimes we're staying out too long. I think that usually happens to most teams. You know, talk to some other coaches. That's probably the hardest thing early in the season is getting players to understand, you know, you can't stay out for minute shifts. So we're going to be constantly on players with that and hold each other accountable. He's a good possibility. I think we dodged a bullet, so there's a good possibility that he'll be in.
Yeah.
It's more of a pain tolerance, and I think he's starting to feel better. More no structure problems.
Still trying to find the mix in the top six.
I think it's, you know, it's early in the season. You want to, you know, try different things. I think I want to get Baines in the lineup. I don't want to see him sit. You know, young guys shouldn't sit that long, and I think he deserves to play tonight.
What would make him a good mix with Miller?
Good forechecker. I think Millsy loves guys that get on the forecheck, that help him out. Baines has that kind of that identity. Plus, you saw the two goals he had in the exhibition, and he can score, you know, even on the power play from that flank, and he can make plays, you know, under pressure. So yeah, no, I think he's a guy that we're having our eye on, that he's going to push some jobs, and hopefully he can be consistent.
Shields?
Yeah, still play tonight.
I know you're visiting with John here, but how involved are you already looking forward to February?
Yeah, Coop's already, we're at a coach's chat, so he'll check in every once in a while, you know. You know, we're all in charge of something, so you got your project done, and you know, talk about players and stuff like that. Coop's great. Like I've known him for years, but just now to be on a staff for him and the way he works and stuff, it's enjoyable. Like, he likes to have fun, as much as, you know, it's a business and stuff. He likes to have fun and integrate the coaches with chemistry. I think that's what one of his gifts are.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet speaking about the game tonight, also talking just a little bit about working with John Cooper, of course, both on the coaching staff, well, Cooper, the head coach, and then Rick Tocchet on his staff for Team Canada going in to the Four Nations tournament in February. And interesting to hear there from Tocchet that there's a good possibility that Tyler Myers could be in the lineup tonight. As he said, they dodged a bullet. And I have to admit, selfishly, I mean, one, I'm very happy for Tyler Myers. I'm also selfishly very happy. Tyler Myers is at 997 career regular season games in the NHL. When we spoke to him, Bick and I spoke to him at the Milford, and I was like, you know what, in my head, I'm just going to screw it, get ahead of it, ask him about the fact that he's about to hit 1,000 games. And I was like, you know, you have to get there, of course. And as soon as he left the game on Friday, Bick texted me and was like, you jinxed it. You screwed it up. You ruined it. And I was like, oh, no, what have I done? So I'm very happy that it seems like Tyler Myers is going to get to that 1,000-game milestone soon here.
It looked like severe knee injury.
It looked really bad.
Yeah.
It looked really bad.
And
I was choked.
And so for him to be day-to-day is unbelievable.
Mm-hmm.
A great stroke of fortune. The Canucks are not positioned to be without a top-four right-handed defenseman. And by the way, very few teams are, right? Like, that doesn't make them unique. They're not a unique special butterfly because, man, if they sustain one injury to a top-four right-handed defenseman, they're in trouble. But they would be in trouble. Contemplating that over the course of the weekend, it was like, oh, boy, that would be a huge loss for this club. You know, whatever your mileage on Myers, that they can't afford to be without him for a prolonged stretch. And in that moment, certainly,
yeah, that's,
you permitted yourself to
that's
imagine.
What you were thinking, for sure. No
Absolutely.
Doubt about it. So great news for him.
So I did the research.
Okay.
I did the research while Rick Tocchet spoke. I've pulled up 25 players from the last 35 years of NHL hockey. Okay. 25 players have accomplished the following. Be over a point per game. Play 400 games in your career and do that before the age of 26, which is what Pettersson has done.
Mm-hmm.
It's an incredible resume, by the way. And the cohort of people who've pulled it off is 25 names long. Okay. I'm going to go in order from points per game on down. Okay. Sidney Crosby.
Sure.
Connor McDavid. Eric Lindros. Joe Sakic. Jaromir Jagr. Pierre Turgeon. Alex Ovechkin. Fedorov. Malkin. Roenick. Kariya. Matthews, Bure, Marner, Dreisaitl, Kucherov, Rantanen, Pastrnak, Modano, Sundin, Kovalchuk, Spezza, MacKinnon, Pettersson, Backstrom.
Some pretty good names there.
Like, I'm sorry. Like, this is where we bump into it again.
Yeah.
Like, I look at this list of players, and what you're telling me, if you think there's a chance in hell that Pettersson is a 40-point player, right? You are telling me that he is a singular outlier, right? The only guy in the NHL to ever come into the league, put up point per game plus across this large a sample of games, and then not be great, right? Like, Pierre Turgeon is the worst player on this list, probably. I would think.
Yeah. Spezza, maybe, but like...
Okay, Spezza.
No, I know, and I'm not saying it's a great list. Like, somebody has to be the worst player on the list,
yeah.
But I mean, yeah,
so,
Pierre Turgeon had 1,300 points in his career.
Spezza played close to 1,300 games, made a Stanley Cup final, and retired 5 points shy of 1,000 for his career. I mean, the it's a simple fact. Like, the resume that Pettersson has at this point, he's tracked through his career to this juncture like a Hall of Fame caliber player. So, you know, am I cutting him 40 games of slack? Yeah.
Although, as somebody pointed out in the inbox, and before we heard from Tocchet, you were like, it would be a once-in-a-generation event, which I think the research backs up, right? And somebody immediately texted in, a once-in-a-generation bad event happening to the Canucks? Never. And I was like, I have to admit, that was my first thought, too. If it was only going to happen once, who would it happen to?
Look, outliers happen.
Yeah.
Okay. We've seen one in Vancouver recently, right? Like, JT Miller at the age of 30 transitions to center and becomes a 100-point guy with plus two-way value. Like, that happened last year. You know, regardless of whether or not he sustains it, that was an unbelievable outlier season,
mm-hmm.
And one that paced the Canucks through a dream campaign. Analytically, right? Like, I'm going to miss on those because I'm not betting on outliers. Like, I'm going to bet against outliers. And then when I see them, I'm enormously impressed. And it's cool. Like, it requires a ton of work and a ton of individual brilliance to put together the sort of campaign that Miller did last year. Yeah, outliers happen. Like, but Pettersson not being a star-level performer going forward would be a black swan event. Like, a true black swan event. Is it possible? Sure. Is the possibility strong? No, absolutely not. History tells us that players that do what Pettersson has done to this point in their career are exceptional talents. Like, the best of the best in hockey. That's it. Like, I don't know. That's how I'm going to assume this plays out, as like a short-term mania of negativity swirling around a player, as opposed to it being, you know, something that anyone serious should lose actual sleep over.
As Tyler texts in, the Canucks, he points out, the Canucks have already had their like once in a generation negative thing so far, right? Which is Thatcher Demko incurring an injury that no hockey player, let alone goalie, has ever experienced before with the popliteus injury. So they're good. They've got their one right. Unique bad thing happened already out of the way this year.
We got someone texting in accusing me of being house radio, which is, by the way, absolutely the first time that's ever happened to me. I'm sure it has happened to other people. But
how does
never...
it feel, Thomas? Welcome to the club, Mike.
You know what?
It's been fully co-opted by the machine.
It's just excellent.
Like, one of us.
Yeah. Me.
Mr. Positivity. Always looking for the spin.
That's what everyone always says about me. Far too kind.
Always trying to find the best in the situation with the Canucks.
Look at us.
Classic, hey. Thomas Drantz.
Look at us. Huh? Who would have thought? Not me.
All right, we'll leave it on that note with Drantz being accused of being house radio. But look, as I said, what's the phrase? Extraordinary whatever requires extraordinary evidence, right? You know what I mean? It would be an extraordinary thing for Elias Pettersson to drop off the map consistently the way he's looked for 40 games here. So it's going to take more time for me to be able to definitively say that that is what's going on. Anyways, it's going to be a conversation until it's not here, right? Until he's stringing together dominant games, it's going to be a talking point.
To leave you with a one last fatalistic text, unsigned from the inbox. Don't ever assume we're only getting a single generational negative event.
So true. All right. On that note, we'll turn things over to Canucks Central with Sat and Dan. They'll have the pregame, of course, 4 p.m. puck drop. You can hear the game here, right here on your home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.